RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Thursday morning means money talks here at RCR, and for the final time in 2024, I'm welcoming Simon Angelo of Wealth Morning onto our money talks. Hey, Simon.
Hey, Paul.
Has it been a good year?
It's been a fantastic year. Looking forward to winding down and having a little bit of a break. Taking the family up to Italy next week. And
nice.
We'll, of course, be looking at some companies that we invest in there as well. I hope you and the team are getting a break.
Yeah, we're getting a break. Not going to Italy, though. Do you need anyone to help?
Well, be careful what you wish for. You're going into the Northern Hemisphere winter. So.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's all right. You find someone
You'll need that hot tub.
Yeah, oh, not the hot tub. Well, there's an innovation. How about a hot tub on the plane?
Oh, now there is an innovation. Wouldn't that be beautiful?
Spa bath or something, you know.
You just have to watch out for the turbulence. You might lose half your bath.
Start sloshing. You put your seatbelt on inside the... Oh, gosh. All right. So great to catch up with you one more time. And a few things to talk about here in the time we've got. I'm not surprised to hear about this. We've been hearing about it a bit now. Kiwis are leaving. Record numbers of young New Zealanders have gone. And how does that affect things? Where are they going?
Mainly Australia.
Yeah.
Secondarily, the UK. I mean, I left New Zealand permanently when I was 40. I moved to Europe. I took my family with me. And I remember... We were actually holidaying in France in the middle of winter. We stayed in a little chateau and the lake was frozen over.
Oh.
And in the lake, there must have been four or five swans that were frozen sitting there in the lake.
Well, and, I did.
Well, my eight-year-old son at the time, he asked that question. He said, oh, Daddy, when the lake defrosts, do they flap their wings and get going again? And I said, No. It's a lesson in that, son. You've got to keep moving in life. You've got to keep going. Don't get stuck.
Do you think they were snap frozen in there?
I suspect so, Paul. The ice would have been too thin to dig them out for the kids, that's for sure.
Well, that puts me off cold water immersion even more.
Yeah, but I mean, young Kiwis, I think, are leaving because they sense that opportunity is not here. And I think a lot of that comes down to housing opportunity. You want opportunity where your income allows you to afford a home. That was always the Kiwi dream and the Aussie dream. And sadly, that's a very challenged dream at the moment.
Yeah, can you ever see that dream being realized again anytime soon? I don't know if I can, but what do I know?
I wish for it more than anything, particularly for my kids. I think it's so integral for our society.
Yeah.
We just got some numbers actually from Immigration New Zealand, actually from Stats New Zealand. So we had 177,900 people arrive, 133,000 departures. So that's a net migration of about 45,000. But here's the thing, we lost almost 55,000 New Zealand citizens, and I reckon a lot of those are going to be under 35.
Well, that's the future, isn't it?
Exactly, it is the future. And there's a thing called the dependency ratio. So that's the numbers of people aged between 15 and 64 who are supporting the kids and the retirees.
Right.
Now, in the 60s and 70s, that number was 7 working age people for every retiree or kid.
Yeah.
We're now down to 4. And if the numbers keep going, we'll be heading down to 2.
Oh, so what do we do?
Well, either have more children, increase your fertility rate.
Well, that's not happening. It's crashing.
Yeah, it's not happening because people are worried about housing and opportunity.
It comes back to that again, yeah.
It does come back to that. You need an economy that works. And look where I'm heading next week. I mean, Italy's got one of the lowest fertility rates in the world, and they're losing about 200,000 people each year. So that creates huge challenges. Tax burden there is about 43% of GDP. 10% more than our own, a lot of debt. It becomes a catch-22 situation, trying to fund pensions while trying to get more people of working, give more people of working age opportunity.
Well, I remember talking to Roger Douglas on this program over a year ago, and he said, we will run out of money on that.
Yes.
If we carry on like we are. It was the rider on that. But that's what he said.
And for a man who used to sit on the books, that is sobering. So if we're not having the 2.1 children per woman that we need, really the only way is immigration, and we need to continue to attract high-quality migrants. And where I live on the North Shore, probably a week doesn't go by where most of the people, or more than half the people I meet, weren't born in New Zealand.
Yeah.
A lot of the people I see were born in South Africa or China or India. And it's interesting to hear from some of them who have only, say, been in the country about a year. And I always ask them, well, what challenges do you face in New Zealand? I actually caught up with a South African couple the other week. She's a medical professional. And she said, well, the whole problem here is it's a beautiful country, love the North Shore beaches, but just the regulation. For me to actually practice and get my paperwork I need to be supervised for 6 months. That's the law. But most of the practices in New Zealand are smaller, and nobody's got the time to supervise me.
Oh, okay. It's even at that level. Gee.
Yeah, there's too many of these weird regulatory situations.
So do we need to go through a whole lot of, like Trump did, go through and just... Milei Javier in Argentina, I saw him in an interview the other day, says for every regulation we pass, we get rid of eight or something.
Yes, I think we need Dodge. We've got the Ministry of Regulation, which will hopefully do more. I think Milei is a very interesting example. That economy of Argentina is projected to grow 8.5% next year. So, I mean, anything and business society comes down to the incentives you create, right? And I think the other thing we've mentioned on your show before is we've got one of the highest company taxes in the world. So if my friend gets her own medical practice going, I mean, you want to tax what you don't want and avoid taxing what you do want, right?
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
If you want people to invest and grow their businesses and in their companies, why have one of the highest company tax rates in the OECD.
Yeah, but how much did we borrow? Was it over $200 billion? The Labor government, pretty well ballpark. They're desperate for money.
Well, that's the straitjacket we find ourselves in, where the interest bill is, what, more than police, law and order, corrections. So you do have more limited room to move. It's not as bad as Italy. But you've actually got to grow the pie. And I was so disappointed the other week to see the news from the Labor Party conference.
Oh, yeah.
They're cooking up, apparently, another new tax. And one of the camps was on the side of a capital gains tax. This is what I read in the media. And the other camp was in the side of a wealth tax. Well, I would say to them, go erect your camp in some other country.
Yeah. Who does that fly with?
Well, I think a wealth tax for a lot of older people would be devastating. I know we've surveyed our client base, and 7 out of 10 would leave New Zealand if there was a wealth tax. They would leave faster than Chippy would quaff a few sausage rolls, I tell you what. And as for capital gains tax, well, there is the argument that Australia has had capital gains tax since 1985, but I mean, their home price to income ratios are worse than us. It's harder to afford a home in urban Australia than in New Zealand. And if you had assets before 1985, before capital gains tax was levied, you've done very, very well.
Yeah.
After 1985, it's a different story. And they've got it's a much bigger company, a bigger country, broader tax base. I mean, almost 1 in 5 of their tax dollars come from iron ore receipts, from corporate iron ore receipts, which we don't have.
No, we don't have that. Though we've got stuff we can dig up. That's another story. I tell you, I was just thinking the big difference between New Zealand and Italy is the Prime Minister is so much prettier.
What, than Luxon?
Just saying. A golden 2025. Is that what you're expecting, really?
From where I'm sitting, Paul, at a trading desk 4 nights a week, it's looking very buoyant. I mean, we are in the process of seeing the normal Santa rally that tends to get underway in December. About 75%
Santa rally, did you say?
Yes, that's right. About 75% of the time from Thanksgiving through to New Year's, the American markets at least rise quite rapidly.
Yeah. Why?
There's various reasons. A lot of it's positivity around the holidays. There's a lot of rebalancing for tax, but it generally tends to be quite a buoyant time.
Yeah. So is there a bull run coming or something? Is that what you call it?
A bull market? I think we've had
a bull market, bull run. Or is a bull run the opposite?
You got a bull market where things are positive and the market's hungry and moving up, and you've got a bear market where it's clawing it down.
Right. Yeah,
okay. We've been in fairly well a bull market for a good part of this year, and bull markets can run quite a long time. But, of course, the question we get from our wholesale clients is, when's it going to end? My stocks have been going up really, really well. You've made some great picks, but when are things going to start to go backwards? And they usually raise questions like Trump's volatility, Ukraine, the Middle East. But the funny thing with markets is they don't price war or politics very much at all.
Okay.
They're mainly interested in numbers. So if you go back to the Cuban Missile Crisis, October 1962, probably the closest we've come to nuclear war.
Yeah, yeah.
So for up until about June, that market was down. But after October 1962, it actually entered one of the longest bull markets we've seen. And with low interest rates and a strong economy, it continued to grow right through to 69. And people talk about, well, can Trump resolve Ukraine? Interesting thing with the Cuban Missile Crisis is initially people thought, oh, it was resolved because Kennedy promised the US wouldn't invade Cuba. What we learned 25 years later, when the file was declassified, was they'd also agreed to remove nuclear missiles from Turkey.
That's right. Yeah.
So we may well see, I mean, when Trump came in, Putin praised him as being intelligent and experienced. So I think that was in the context of doing a deal on this horrific grinding war that's gone far too long.
Yeah. Yeah, they say, I've heard people say, you throw a bit of flattery Trump's way and it's all on, you know. Maybe that's what Putin was thinking. He had his best advisors tell him that.
I think it's a very complex situation because if they, I mean, the US has provided about 43% of the aid for that war.
Mm.
The next largest provider is Germany at 12%. So by definition, the US has the most leverage in negotiations.
Right.
But if you then oppose a peace deal on Ukraine, which involves sacrificing some territory, in exchange for security guarantees, well, then you've got to ask the question about other sovereignty conflicts like Taiwan. Is this peace through strength?
Yeah.
So I would say it's a very, very difficult negotiation. But one thing is for sure, if it can resolve, I think that will be another boost to European markets. It'll be one more worry that's out of the way.
And that'll happen in 25, won't it? Got to.
I think it's got to. And it would be good for the world to see it. But, I mean, look, I think the other reason that it will resolve is it's been so hard on the Russian economy, just the sheer strain of funding a war economy. I mean, you've got interest rates of 21%. You're still not on top of inflation, which is running at 8.5%. And you've got the ruble at its lowest point in 2 years. So it's a struggle.
I read a day or two ago that they were committing a third of their government spend to military now, third.
Yes, and essentially when you fire a missile and it explodes, it's the end of the money.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing comes back at all. All right, passive income. Rebellious investors are starting to go against the grain. What do you mean by that?
We are seeing a lot of particularly older clients who have had rental properties, sometimes several rental properties, and there's a wariness of continuing to manage them.
Oh, okay, yep.
And the income yields aren't what they used to be. I mean, if you take out all the costs of running a rental property, particularly here in Auckland, you might be lucky to get 2 or 3%. Whereas when you go into the share market, there are a number of really good dividend-paying shares, particularly across the world, where you might get 5, 6, 7, or 8% on your money and some capital growth. I mean, a great example, Westpac Bank, stock price is up 55% this year. That's 55% growth. And then the dividend yield, is 5%. So that's 60% for sitting on your hands. Now, I should say, Paul, while we're speaking of deregulation, I have to tell you, it's not financial advice. That's one of the regulations I suffer under. Every time I mention a company, I've got to put that in.
No, fair enough. We understand.
No advice on Westpac.
No, even though those numbers are... No, okay. So could it be possible, could we be seeing... maybe it won't be that rapid, maybe it will, a disconnect away from financial independence through property, because that's been almost a cultural thing, hasn't it? A dependency, let's say. Could that be broken soon, do you think, just on those numbers that you mentioned?
Well, we've had a fantastic run for the good part of 20 years, no question. But now the yields aren't there, so unless you're going to get huge capital gain, that's the only reason you're investing for. But with Bishop's new going for housing growth, which here in Auckland could add 100,000 sections, will make them in theory available from next year, that changes the whole market dynamics in terms of supply. And as we've mentioned at the start of the interview, the immigration numbers are really slowing down. We're struggling to attract large numbers of people, and we're actually losing a lot of Kiwis in the process.
So that fixes, though, that starts to address the issue that we talked about earlier, and that is at the root cause of a lot of the economic issues that individuals in the nation faces is that lack of housing. So that's a good thing, isn't it?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, it's not a great thing if you've got a rental property portfolio or you've got your heart set on building wealth through property, but I don't think private homes were... They were never meant to be an asset class for investing and speculating on.
I agree.
They're a place to live.
Yeah, and that should always be thought of as that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think when I was growing up in the 80s, I sort of learned very early on the lesson of, well, don't put all your money into property. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Because I saw my parents struggle with, in the 80s, when I was growing up, interest rates of 20%.
Now, I remember that. My first house, it was 17 or 18% mortgage.
It was really hard. Sometimes it was just no money left on the weekend for even an ice cream.
Yeah.
And then I remember when we moved to suburban New Plymouth after sort of living further afield, they sort of built a dream home on an 800 square metre section, lovely subdivision. And Housing New Zealand at the time was integrating state housing across various neighbourhoods. And we ended up with a couple of gang houses in the street.
And
I was a local paper boy, and they had a couple of dogs trained to fight.
Oh, dear.
And if you've ever faced one of those, anything the market throws at you at the trading desk doesn't matter.
Okay. But,
it was sort of good at the start. They promised to protect your car and all that. But after a while, there's the fights and the parties, and there was blood on a picket fence one morning. And
oh, no.
My mother was actually quite prescient. Before Housing New Zealand started buying in the area, she said, oh, let's sell. And I think Dad wanted to do a bit more finishing work on the home. But that investment lost a lot of money, because when people drive into the street and see the old cars.
Falcons.
So diversify.
I take it none of them had a newspaper subscription, I'm picking. You weren't delivering. All right. Well, always good to catch up. Have a great trip away. And it's been really cool being able to chat through this year. Thanks for coming on the program. And we'll do it again in 2025 when the golden age is here. We'll know it, right? When we start talking again.
Yes, it'll be wonderful, Paul. I mean, I can't guarantee you I'm going to be right, but from where I'm sitting, that's how things are looking now. And I feel very, 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 very buoyant, very positive. And look, if people want to learn more about our work at Wealth Morning, they can get hold of John's book on how China and the BRICS might affect your wealth. You can get that free ebook at wealthmorning.com.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.